Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining our first Paris IIS Ideas. My name is Paulius. I am the scientific director at the Paris Institute for Advanced Study. This is a new speaker series that we are inaugurating today, in which we will feature short talks, 20-minute talks from fellows that are coming to the Institute for 1 month in a short writing residence program, in which they will be writing the definitive version of an idea or concept they have been working on for years. This could be on research as researchers or as practitioners in a position of responsibility. And we will have one session of talks every month on the first or the second Friday. We will send you all reminders since you registered for this talk. And in each session, we will have two, three, or four of these short talks on very different topics, but that are exciting ideas from our institute. Today, for this first talk, we only have one. We will have Juan Pablo Caicedo. Juan Pablo is our first fellow in this program, and he's a master in public administration and urban planning from Harvard University. He's also a lawyer and literature graduate from the Universidad de los Andes. And more relevant for today, he's the manager at the Bogota mayor's office of this project of urban renewal in one of the most important avenues in Bogota. He's also a lecturer in political science at the Universidad Javeriana in Bogota. So I will give the floor to Juan Pablo in just a moment. The way this is going to work is that we will have the 20-minute talk, and then we will have 30 minutes for questions. You can either write your questions during the talk in the chat, and then I will read them at the end, or you can just wait and use the raise hand function on Zoom. I think that's it. So welcome, Juan Pablo. Thank you for joining us, and go ahead.
Hi, Paulius. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm very happy to present some of the work that we've been doing in the city of Bogota around this big project called Corredor Verde Séptima, or Green Corridor of Avenue Séptima in Bogota. I also want to thank Paris IIS, the Institute of Advanced Studies, for having me here this month, trying to consolidate some of these key ideas that we've been working on from the city of Bogota. For the next 20 minutes, what I want to do is to basically describe a little bit what this project is about, and then connect it, or try to connect it, or suggest some connections between this project and the 15-minute framework, 15-minute city framework work by Carlos Moreno here in the city of Paris. And how this project, we think, is a way to show kind of the consolidation of this aspiration of having 15-minute infrastructure very close to everyone, every single one of the residents of the city. So without further ado, let's start. Let's just have a brief conversation about what Séptima Avenue is in the city of Bogota and why this is an important place and corridor for the city. Specifically, what I want to show you first is how this in the 1920s was actually what in current urban planning policy would be denominated as a complete street, right? Like a place in which there is no conflict between different users of the street. You have public transit as a priority. You have pedestrians walking around and some private cars as well, enjoying a city at a human scale with a lot of commerce in the first floor. You know, most of the things that you actually aspire right now in modern urban theory you could see them in Bogota in 1920, no? But you, now we're gonna see how this has evolved throughout time. And this is very common in many cities throughout the world, right? How as private car infrastructure becomes maybe the main priority of most of the cities, city governments just start investing more in, you know, segregating some of that very close space between buildings and walkable environments into more efficient kind of infrastructure for particularly private cars, as well as distances start to grow apart. And as you need to connect more and more citizens coming to town to the downtown infrastructure. Right now, this was the last renovation that this corridor has had. This is early 1970s or late 1960s. And this is how the corridor looks right now, right? There's a lot of conflict, a lot of unsafeness for walkability, for bikers, for even for private car users and for public transit users. This is basically a chaos that we've been trying in the city of Bogota to renovate and to work through for the last 25 years, right? So this, just for you to have a little bit more context, is a very important and critical corridor that actually is sowed very close to the Eastern Hills of the city, which is probably the most important ecologic asset that the city of Bogota has. And it has been growing as the city has been developing further north. So where you see far right on your screen, Calle 26 would be city downtown where the city started developing. And then as you go all the way north to the left of your screen, you see the city limit in the north, right? And Septima really sows the city as the Eastern Hills accompany its development, which also makes it super challenging for a lot of different communities and uses. This is the actual state of art right now of the corridor. I mean, as you can see, some of the pictures between what's happening near 200th Street, where regional connectivity should start, is not in very good condition. There is no quality public transit, although this is a public transit corridor. More than 70% of the users of the corridor are actually commuters by public transit, and they're stuck in traffic for very, very long periods of time. Also, sidewalks are in very poor shape. They're not secure, they're not accessible, and public spaces are horrible as well, right? There's a lot of patrimony very close to Septima. We have the national parks, we have the city's World Trade Center and economic kind of force, and many other places, government houses, Palace of Justice, the Congress, etc. But this is the current state, which is not great, right? So what are we talking about when we talk about a green corridor and why we think is the actual best opportunity for a corridor like this one, right? And basically, if you walk down through history in the city of Bogota, trying to renew this corridor is very difficult, right? We have tried literally every single possible transit project in Septima Avenue. We tried underground metro. We tried to structure a tram. We tried to structure heavy BRTs or bus rapid transit technology, which is what the city of Bogota is mostly known or renowned worldwide, right? But none of them have actually stick. There's nothing that we could pursue into actually the final stages of construction, which we're right now in this project transitioning towards, right? And our diagnosis in the city of Bogota basically drives four different things. Number one, most of these projects have been public transit driven projects, right? The city has only focused in trying to accommodate some public transit infrastructure without thinking about what the street actually means to people and many other dimensions that are critical to a project like this, right? There is no holistic approach. There is no sensitivity whatsoever in many of the city design responses to the avenue's ethos, and it's important in the history of the city. As I was telling you before, this is a very important place where people aspire, you know, that things should actually look like the identity of the city. pretty much as it might be Broadway Street in New York City or even in Champs-Élysées here in Paris, right? This critical, very much historically heavy places where people really want to see that most of their imaginaries as a citizen or as an inhabitant of a city or even as a part of a country's imaginary should be recognized. And the city hasn't been able to kind of sow that in a correct manner either, right? There is no ecologic sensibility or solution whatsoever in many of these projects that we've been working around for the past 25 years. And as I was showing you a minute ago, this actually becomes a very important place for ecologic life and biodiversity, right? And as well, there is no quality public space design. There is no sensibility towards making this actually a place, right? Only moving people from A to B in the most efficient way possible. We think that all of these concepts should be repurposed, you know, and in the end, to build what we call a green corridor, right? Which is actually a manifesto in favor of this territorial and social identity of the city, right? Which is also a project that is respectful and integrates biodiversity. And we're going to see in a minute how, and aims to demonstrate how this city can be built from an ecology and sustainability perspective, not only from a sustainable mobility perspective, which is also critical, of course, for adaptation and climate change, but also in terms of landscaping, architecture, and really building high quality streets that really support and promote clean forms of mobility, right? So this is part of the process that we've been working for the last almost 4 years. This started as a vision of Mayor Claudia Lopez, where she wanted to really revisit all of the projects in Séptima and try to consolidate a different approach and a different idea, more around these three R's of reverdecer, which is regreen, right? Recuperate and revitalize public spaces, giving them different uses. Just for you to know, her tenure started in 2020, right in the midst of the COVID crisis. And this, of course, was critical for many cities to understand the importance of public spaces for many of the social purposes of actually living in cities. And in that sense, we also started a very ambitious, and we're going to discuss it in a second, participation and engagement process, in which we wanted to understand with different residents, but of course, academics and other members of society, what would be the real and best focus for a project in Séptima, right? And this participation access is critical because most of the other projects have not been able to pursue construction because of a participation issue, because there's been some organization around or opposition around these projects because of how important the corridor is, right? And in that sense, we were able, through different tactics that we're gonna show in a second, to build three different pillars, which we're gonna develop a little bit further, in which we had a cohesive narrative around sustainable mobility, not only public transit, ecologic harmony in design, right? And a sense of place. And I'm gonna discuss a little bit how what this means and why that's important. For that, we had a lot of allies outside of the city. Gehl Architects, which is a huge architecture firm founded by Jan Gehl, which is probably the most important urbanist in the 20th century, that really focused most of his work in bringing back the focus of city building into the human experience. And then Agence Terre here in Paris, and IDOM, which is an engineering firm in Spain and Colombia, also helped us a lot in trying to consolidate these concepts towards a structuring of detailed engineering, which we've already achieved. So this was also a part of a huge discussion, political discussion in the city, in which we wanted to really give the city a new vision code or zoning code where sustainable mobility and this permeability and connection between what the Eastern Hills and the side of the river all the way west of the city border really were about, right? The Agence Terre here in France referred it as an ecoton, Séptima, as a possible connection or transition environment between what was happening in the hills and what would happen in the river, right? And this accessibility and this way of focusing infrastructure towards a more sensible connection between what's happening very close to us in the hills and how we move and what we're devoting space to was also critical for the building of this concept. Right now, I'm going to discuss quickly why we think it's important to also consider a 15-minute city approach and how this project tries to sew around that concept as well. Right, the building blocks of a 15-minute city are basically these four: participation, proximity, solidarity, and ecology. In terms of participation and solidarity, is how you give the chance for people to actually engage with the infrastructure and the projects that cities are pursuing, and how they will be the guardians of these projects and they will somehow help city to develop them. And then proximity, of course, is probably the key idea in this concept, which is having a lot of services at least a 15-minute walk or bike ride, right? All of the services that a human needs from a city, which can be, you know, healthcare, education, entertainment, grocery shopping, et cetera, et cetera. And then ecology as a key concept to actually build more resilient cities, right? So how did we do it, particularly in Septima? This is kind of the co-creation process that we built from the beginning. This is early 2020, and how even before having just one line or one engineering decision, we've already engaged with a lot of people on the streets, right? We asked them for design proposals, and we tried to abstract and create these design pillars that we would want it to then come true and come forward with, right? Which we will see in a second. So that co-creation part, even before having a pre-feasibility, which is the most basic study in hardcore engineering to pursue, that was useful for us to create a conversation, an aspirational conversation on where we should take this project, right? And for that, you can see on the right of your screen some of the strategies that we use. So we use this open source platform called StreetMix, in which we actually had the real length of the street, which is variable throughout the 22 kilometers of the project, to ask people, okay, this is what you have today, right? And you see around 163rd Street, what the Septima Avenue looks today. And then we ask them, you can repurpose it. You can do our work, right? You can then make the decisions of what you wanna do and what you wanna prioritize, because our space is actually limited, right? So we need you to tell us, how would you do our job? And through a street mix, what they did with the exact same street wide that they would have in each of the points of the corridor, people would tell us, right? And more than 7,000 people actually participated in a around 2-week engagement in which we could collect a lot of data to kind of start directioning very difficult decisions, right? Such as, for example, what we should do with private car space, because as you see, what we have right now is basically private car space. And what people want, they want wider pedestrian areas, they want biking, they want segregated public transit on ground, right? And they want more green. So there's a lot of things you need to do and difficult conversations you need to have throughout the process to actually discuss some of these concepts and then do a lot of like heavy traffic engineering to support these kind of decisions, right? But this was critical for us to actually give shape to a project that was different, not only focused in public transit, but also focused in sustainable mobility and pedestrian infrastructure, right? Which was actually kind of the huge shift that we were trying to do. We're not doing public transit projects. We're doing something way more ambitious, which is integrating ecology and giving it space for us to be more resilient, but of course, allowing people to make better decisions on how they move throughout the city. Because if you accommodate better infrastructure for biking, better infrastructure for walking, and we'll see in a minute how that relates to proximity, then people will make better decisions as they commute, right? And then now in the detailed design phase, we did a lot of different engagement strategies as well, because as we were maturing the project, we were then seeing how difficult things were coming up, right? And the major discussion right now in Bogota is, how are we gonna support the amount of people that actually wanna move by private cars and they don't want to, you know, do this modal shift of now using public transit or biking or whatever, if they're having less space, right? So this kind of infrastructure is also, discussion is super important, and we've been having a lot of engagement. And then we're transitioning into construction, where we want to have open channels for impact assessment and communication. Of course, all of this trying to involve people and to build some of this like culture and appropriation during the operation of the project, right? Because then we're going to have this new infrastructure, very nice, very expensive kind of to maintain and to preserve. And we need a lot of cultural appropriation and solidarity, as the 15-minute framework speaks about. Right. Quickly, I'm not gonna use a lot of time in this, but this is how we created this input, right? This input into design pillars. So people were asking us, we want more trees, we want more security, we want more citizen culture, we want more biking, we want to walk, we want fauna, etc. Right. So we had like a very clear pillar around ecologic integration. We had a very clear pillar around sustainable mobility, which is electric public transit, segregated bike lanes, multimodality, right? And this sense of place, how we're going to use all of this remnant space that we're actually having because of the project. And what people want is more programming, more public spaces to actually enjoy the corridor, right? Now, talking about proximity, there's two different ways of understanding. Number one, of course, long trips. As I was telling you, the 15-minute city framework, it's an aspirational framework in the end, because you already have like public and social infrastructure wherever they are, and changing commuting patterns is going to probably take, I don't know, 50 to 100 years, right? Because most of the people want to go where all of the jobs are concentrated and things like that. So in terms of proximity and long trips, what we want is, of course, pursue multimodality, right? But what we want is for people that actually move more in a more sustainable manner to actually do it in a quickly manner as well, right? Today, a normal citizen is investing 90 to 120 minutes commuting through the corridor, just one leg, right? This is almost 240, 250 minutes a day to get to their working place. And of course, this we want to change. And just the idea of having new infrastructure that is interconnected to other new projects that are on their way would be very useful for them to actually pursue proximity in terms of time savings. And then for short trips, this is critical, and this is even closer to the 15-minute framework, right? Because what we want is for people that are actually doing short trips in an unsustainable manner. There's a lot of people using their private car to move, I don't know, 800 meters, you know, to do their grocery shopping or to take their kids to daycare. What we want is for them to actually have dedicated space for them to enjoy the city within the corridor, right? And this, we call it the active and inhabited strip, which is having the accommodation of some infrastructure to actually be friendly for people to run or to enjoy the city, to use their bikes, but also to run errands that they normally would do in a more unsustainable artifact, such as a private car, right? To do it in a more humane and enjoyable experience. How to bike safely in a segregated bike lane, or just walk around the city and enjoy the city. Most of the trips that are done in the most consolidated part of the city of Bogota, which is the arrondissement of Chapinero, they're done in private cars, right? So just if we do some of that modal shift to only optimize whoever really needs to do their trip in a private car, you know, an older adult or somebody that has a healthcare condition or for a particular stream of work, etc., then the city would be more sustainable and really this proximity concept would be achieved. Right. And then finally, we have ecology, which is the integration of urban nature, right? How landscaping design taking very, very seriously, really including a continuous urban canopy, totem trees, functional gardening, infiltration systems, water management, and what we call biodiversity aisles, which is having different strata of endemic species, right? This is part of the work that we did with Agence Terre here in Paris and in Bogota. to really select trees that are more useful for this ecotone and this connection between what's happening in the hills and what should happen in the river down west, right? So there's a lot of like ecologic sensitivity to landscaping for us to actually achieve some of the sustainable objectives that this project has. Now, and then finally, just to show you how this looks on the ground, we have our three pillars, which are the cohesive narrative to consolidate this project, as I told you, ecosystemic harmony, sense of place, and sustainable mobility. The main innovation around this project is we're not only focused in trying to take people or force people to use public transit by having more infrastructure, right? We want people to have a better relationship with the built environment, with their built environment, and the way they're using it. And for that, you need the three pillars to work and to this, like to connect and even to have a conversation depending on where in the project you are, right? These are the design guidelines responding to those pillars. Each of them, it's integrated to the detailed design, right? So we have urban furniture, we have public space design, we have this canopy and biodiversity concepts, we have walkability, we have healthy materials and places. We have also night lightscaping, which is critical and it's not very advanced in the city of Bogota. And then of course, materials and design decisions that prioritize whatever is more sustainable and achieves more the goals of the project. So here you can see how, I mean, some of these design decisions come to place, where we have way more space, right, for public transit, and we have this permeability, and the corridor feels very, very walkable and secure for every single user of the road. You can't see the bike lane, but it's there, right? It's toward the lower part of your screens between public transit and this segregated parking place we have western part of the corridor. And this is kind of the night landscaping strategy, which is also critical for people to actually use some of this infrastructure at night as well, right? So this is kind of the physical development of this active strip, where you can see how people should interact in different layers of the project and how biodiversity becomes key and how some of the operation of the project actually works. And here you see most of the integrated strategies and how now these places are more walkable, more integrated. It's easier to connect by sustainable means. And you have kind of reduced private car traffic to whatever it should be just, fair, and useful for the trips of the city, right? Today, most of the corridor is occupied by private cars, whereas they only imply less than 25% of the trips, right? So we wanna give them the space. That's actually right. So now to close, I know I've been a little bit extended in this final part. I have some key reflections and limitations I really wanna share with you guys. So number one, we do think green corridors are a key strategy to consolidate this 15-minute city infrastructure because they're participatory by design. As they integrate from very early phases, the conversation with citizens, but we also want to bring this solidarity and to consolidate this solidarity within neighbors and users throughout the structuring process, aiming to consolidate a better culture and usage during operation phase, right? Ecology is at the center of design decisions. Resilient infrastructure plus more space for cleaner uses of road space is critical for us. And then finally, of course, proximity is the aspirational goal, right? We want time reduction for long travelers, but also new possibilities and new imagination of how to use their space for short travelers, which is really the 15-minute kind of win of the framework. Also, this project is a catalyst for urban renewal and first floor activation. So we want to repurpose current buildings and infrastructure for different uses that we're right now not using, and this is also critical in the 15-minute city framework. Now, as a closing kind of reflection, this is what this has been about in the last 25 years in the city of Bogota, right? We've been taking a winner-takes-all bet, right, in which we want to aim for cultural change through infrastructure development, And this has shown as a very costly and high risk kind of activity, right? Because as I was telling you, the city has invested a lot of time, a lot of resources into trying to materialize these projects, and it hasn't been successful for the last 25 years. So still public resistance to change is very, very strong. Public participatory intentions led by the city have also consolidated organized communities against the cities, right? So these people actually meet in public engagement spaces, and they start rallying, funding, and attracting media to organize themselves against initiatives in the corridor. And then another reflection is people really cannot weigh correctly tomorrow's gains and the city's priorities or government priorities with today's losses, right? How can we do it better? How can we help them to do better? We've done some things to try to have this conversation, but still this is a very contentious project. And we really would like to hear from you guys some ideas on how we can be more effective in that way, right? And then many direct beneficiaries of this project, which are lower income communities, these very long commuters, are not willing to invest any resources in defending the political agenda or the public agenda, right? Also, they tend to have less of these resources, right? So the question would be how to activate them without capturing their independence, right? We don't want as a city to just, you know, let them know like this is in your best interest. We want them to, of course, have their freedom, but to engage more actively in the project, which we think is absolutely critical. And then just this reflection from one of my teachers at the Harvard Graduate School of Design, which also mentored Janet Sadik Khan, which is probably one of the most transformative urban planners of our era. She served as head of the Department of Transportation in New York City during the Bloomberg administration for at least 8 years. And Gerald Kaden would say, to plan is human, right? But to implement is divine. So how can we keep building these bridges towards more implementation instead of a lot of discussion to actually transform these people's lives, transform these behaviors, which is what this project is actually about. So that will be me. Thank you so much for listening to our presentation, and I'm looking forward very much to knowing some of your thoughts.
Great. Thank you so much, Juan Pablo. Thank you everyone for listening. So we can begin with some questions. So Sadi.
Yes, hello, and thank you very much. This is a fabulous project and fabulously difficult. So my feeling here, because you're asking for suggestions and how can we do better, right? So my feeling here is that, I mean, nature hates a vacuum, right? So if you don't offer something else to do, the transport business will continue to absorb everything here. And if you want to resist this, which is apparently something that has been a problem in the past, probably you have to build and create some incentives. And I mean, as a behavioral scientist, more or less, I'm always guided by activity. So if you want to go there, at the moment, the only activity is transport, okay? Now, if there were cafes or kiosks or attractions or something else, I would want to preserve that place because I have an activity there that is not transport. So my question here is that, have you thought of another activity people can have here that would not be transport and that would make them take, you know, ownership and want to keep that place for something else than transport?
Could I answer, Paulus? I think
yes,
so, right?
Please. Yes.
Thank you, Sadi, so much for the question, because that's critical to what we're trying to do. And probably, and one of my frustrations then as a public servant for particularly this project, and I'm going to go back to one of the renders to discuss what this is about. One of my frustrations is we really wanted, and it was like a Gale recommendation, and we had a lot of recommendations. So you need to give people an anchor way before the project is here, right? For them to appropriate of this space. And this, like, again, to implement these kind of initiatives is very difficult during a tenure in government, which times are very short and very demanding, and there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of bureaucracy you need to navigate. So the reason why I'm showing you this is because actually all of this infrastructure that you see in the upper part of this rendering, it's actually land that we had to acquire for the project to fit, right? And this land is actually not used right now. It's actually closed because there hasn't been a way for us to create some programming and some activation of these public spaces that would be wonderful once we're done, right? During like this public engagement and the structuring phase. So what you're saying is definitely something that is critical for us, because again, what we're the only way we could fit this in the timeframe that we had was to, you know, do it throughout and have a like a value proposition that was strong, that could integrate most of what people really want and aspire from the from this corridor. Because part of the discussion was as well that actually people want to, you know, to stay. People want to enjoy the corridor as they do with Broadway, again with Champs-Élysées or with any other like key place, right? Key street that it, that actually identifies whatever happens on the street with the ethos of the city, right? Right now we weren't able, and it was a huge frustration for me. You know, the zoning alternatives are there for us to do some of this implementation. We want it to happen in the short term. We're actually using many new strategies for these public operators of public transit to actually build new things to do and museums. And we've had a lot of conversations around that. But to do it during the structuring phase of the project, which I think is what you're suggesting, and I'm sure would be way more effective to, you know, to create a more solidarity kind of response using the framework. It's a huge frustration, at least for me, because navigating public administration is super difficult. And there's a lot of caveats, bureaucratic caveats, that were very difficult for us to actually implement, although we tried, right? So definitely, I agree with you that these incentives of giving them places to actually do it more than just a pilot, because we did some pilots to kind of show people how this could look like. It's a huge frustration, and I'm pretty sure like having easier paths towards those kind of implementations would be super useful for the project. But thank you so much for the input.
Great. Thank you so much. Alejandro, please.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Actually, you know, my mother lives in Rosales. So, and I participated a lot with like people that have been working on this. Full disclaimer, your topic touches on two pet peeves that I have, the 15-minute city and storytelling, like persuasive practitioners, and like how these stories get told in ways that, you know, like ignoring lots of elements also. Like I live half of my life in France, and the people doing bike policy in France, like Aline Gillette and Charlotte Boot and the people from ADMA and FUB, they're all like people that I work with. So sanitized storytelling, modernity, right? Like the picture that you show a picture of the 20s where Bogota is already implementing stuff about cars and destroying the, you know, the infrastructure that actually, you know, that colonial city that was for walkability was already being destroyed. The whole, I mean, I would love for you to implement a Corredor Verde in the Septima, but this is, you know, it's a project in the long line of projects that have failed, as you mentioned, in the Septima. And you know, this is a tricky situation, and you're in charge of the project, but when the major leaves her charge by the end of the year, probably what's going to happen is that the next major is going to abandon the project. And it's going to be another one in that very long list of projects that failed. NIMBYism. So, you know, the work of Montero about the whole opposition of the neighbors in the Septima. So, you know, and participation, like how do we do participation? So I used to go to Consejos Locales de Participación before leaving Colombia like 10 years ago. And the whole thing is it's expensive. It doesn't reach the right people. And even in Paris, people have problems with this. Like, you know, say, ask the people that live outside of the suburbs, like not the people that live within Paris intramuros, what do they think of a 15-minute city and how it is implemented in, you know, in the city. So there's one thing about how you tell a story about this to an audience. And, you know, this is like a fancy audience, you know, like, you know, you have people probably from all over the world listening to you, professional people with good backgrounds about this. It does not touch on topics like gentrification. So, you know, 15-minute city in Paris, problems of gentrification. Who can live in central Paris? Who can afford the prices in central Paris? Who can afford living close to the septime in Bogota? It's the same problem. And we do not talk about it. And the last thing, and I know, and truly, I want you to take this, you know, like, I hope that this is useful. I do a lot of bike stuff. I do bike stuff in the US. I do bike stuff in Colombia. I do bike stuff in France. When the mayor, Claudia Lopez, went to Bloomberg Bike Week maybe 6 months ago, she asked a friend of mine to do the schedule for her, a guy called Mateo Carvajal, who works at this fancy bike logistics firms in Amsterdam. She did not ask her own bike manager, Andrea Maria Navarrete at the time, about what she would like, what does she need to do about this in the city? And so Mateo asked me, what should I tell the mayor? How can I do the schedule? And I asked Andrea Maria, but you know, she works for her and she doesn't ask the question. So once again, whose perspective is being represented and how and why? Because if you don't take into account all of these things, then the project is gonna fail. Sorry for that. Like, it really comes from the bottom of my heart. Sorry.
Oh, thank you, Alejandro, for joining us. I mean, that's part of the huge discussion here, right? And that's why the reflections aim towards the difficult manner of navigating power in the end, right? I think, of course, this is an urban planning discussion and an infrastructure discussion and a sustainability discussion, etc. But in the end, it's just, or at least the city of Bogota, I think it's a power discussion, right? And a vision of the city discussion. Because as well, like, you can do a very similar project in Fifth Avenue in New York City. You can do a very similar project in Champs-Élysées here, right? But if you do it in Septima, it's insane. And there's a lot of caveats to that. And I don't want to focus on that, but I just want to say that definitely this, and the reason why it's interesting to do it, like to have this reflection and this space at IAS, is because this is, you know, a sociological problem. This is not a technical problem, right? One of the first interviews I did as a graduate at HKS regarding this project, the first thing I told the person that I was talking to was, Septima has limited amount of engineering solutions, right? But infinite amount of social issues and discussions, because there's a lot of influential people living around the corridor, because every single mayor or mayoral candidate will have their own take on what they should do. And that's why the city hasn't really moved forward, right? What we did here was try, you know, to consolidate a vision that was as inclusive as possible without undermining the real transit necessities of the city, right? Because in the end, you're doing a big, you're spending a lot of money in this project. And in that sense, you need to try to find a good balance between all of the things. It's never gonna be perfect, right? When people don't like a project, they'll never say engagement was enough, right? Or strategies for public participation were broad enough or sensible enough or inclusive enough, right? But then your closest enemy when you're trying to pursue these kind of results is status quo, right? And in the end, you have to know and balance when you're falling into the trap of just pursuing status quo because you want to do perfect, right? And when you're trying to move forward an agenda that is really more holistic and integral and really kind of speaks to the understanding of what we want to do. Right. And this is a little bit what we're trying to do in this project. Probably is not perfect. There's a lot of contention. It will be forever. But again, it's more a sociological and a political problem than it is a technical problem. Right here, we've discussed in a great manner some of the technical gains. But of course, these technical gains all aim for cultural change, which is what I think it's important about this project. It's not about if it's nice, if it isn't, if it's BRT, if it's electric, if it's hydrogen, if it has gardening or not, right? It's about how through these investments, we really try for people to start living their lives better in a city like Bogota, right?
Great. Thank you so much. Any other questions?
Maybe I'll pick up on some of Alejandro's comments and Juan Pablo's answer.
Yes.
To focus a little bit more on the social sociological dilemmas that Juan Pablo acknowledged. First of all, let me say it really looks like a fantastic project, and you have a great team of world leading experts working on it. So it's really of the highest quality, it seems. But going back to this main sociological issue, I have in mind a project that was developed in Johannesburg about 10 years ago under the heading of Corridors of Freedom, whereas your project is entitled The Green Corridor, right? And that already strikes me as a kind of difference in the social ambitions related to the project. In Johannesburg, it was intended to kind of restructure the existing social spatial structure of the city due to apartheid planning, etc. And the main intervention aside of the BRT lanes that were proposed there was also a very big program of affordable housing, and really making sure that affordable housing are intended to the lowest income communities in the city, and turning that project into an opportunity of bringing people much closer to the center, right? So not just in terms of being able to take public transit and be more mobile and arrive faster to the city center, but actually living there and actually creating mixed racially mixed and income mixed communities. So I was wondering whether this kind of thinking was part of your project as well. Is it there somewhere? We haven't heard so much about it in your presentation, but whether it's there in the wider context of discussions, how would a project like that lead to a more spatially equal, equitable Bogota, in a sense? And then one more question related to the related to the ecological impact of the project as well. So was there also a study trying to evaluate just how much, carbon emissions a project like that would reduce? Because it's one thing to show these wonderful green simulations full of trees, and obviously there's a substantial impact to switching to public transit. But is there a way to kind of quantify that and link that also to an ambitious climate action plan for Bogota? Because I'm less aware of what's done in Bogota in that sense. Thanks.
Thank you, Nat. Amazing questions. So for the first one, what I would say, which probably I didn't include, I mean, even Paulius was texting me here like, come on, you're done. You don't have enough time. So there's a lot of things we can discuss around this. And I think the number one, again, as you mentioned, the South African example, this is super aspirational, right? In the sense that most of the land that the city had acquired for further projects, which was, a very classic heavy BRT, Bogota style kind of line. That was the last project that actually Mayor Peñanosa tried to pursue at the time. We had a lot of like land pockets, right, to work with. And I'm going to go back again to one of Martica's renders, which I see Martica is here with us. She's part of our team in Bogota. She's one of the most amazing landscape architects in the country. And I'm very happy that she's here sharing with us right now. But what we did here, so basically, and as a part of that conversation, what we're lacking, particularly in the centrality of the city, is social services, which is crazy, right? Because, it's mostly high-income jobs, high-income neighborhoods, etc. So the thing with spatial segregation in Bogota is that all of these people have their own, you know, private oasis of schools, of clinics, of private clubs, etc., etc. So there's not a lot of public infrastructure, right? So part of the approach that we had, more than just housing or more than a housing approach, was a public infrastructure approach throughout the project, right? In a sense that most of the people that actually come here, there's almost 800,000 people of floating commuters to this area, right? They come from low-income communities, most of them, and they don't have any services around, right? So there is no, they have to travel all the way back or all the way throughout the city again, you know, to find where their hospital is or whatever, or where this huge strategy that the city is now pursuing called Manzanas del Cuidado, which is block cares, where there's this infrastructure equipped for women, you know, to leave whoever they take care of, either the elderly or their kids, and then the city will take care of them, and as they could, you know, learn some new skills, learn English, or do some of the things they would do at home, you know, in the sense of giving them the most precious asset that they're losing as they take care of others, which is time, right? So most of the remnants of our spaces were devoted to road space in the last project, right? So here we're doing some kind of road diet to promote this public infrastructure, right? To have block cares, to have new cultural spaces for all citizens to engage, you know, and start little by little using this huge money investment in colonizing not only high-income communities, but also all other communities that work here into public assets, into high-quality public assets, right? So that's kind of the approach that we've been taking throughout the project. People in the engagement process wanted more places to actually, as Ari was saying, to, you know, to stay and to hang out and to enjoy the city. What we wanted is to give them social anchors to actually have something to do as well that is useful for their lives, right? Either after work, you know, stay there and learn English and learn, I don't know, programming, as we were discussing yesterday, or Excel, or whatever can move them forward, you know? Not necessarily like a zoning perspective, but definitely that was super important for us. And then in terms of measuring carbon emissions or emissions at all with all of this green infrastructure, there's a lot of gains. I don't have the specifics here with me, but there are gains like in terms of resiliency, in terms of how much this landscaping infrastructure is able to absorb of the water that comes down from the hills, which is a vast amount, and how that is problematic for the city and how this infrastructure will help in that sense. And even just, you know, projecting the amount of trips that are going to be zero emissions. Today, we have around 6% of the trips being zero emissions, which is basically bike users, right? We're going to scale that to 87% of the trips in Septima are going to be zero emissions, right? That's super ambitious. And that, of course, has a PM10, PM35, et cetera, kind of reduction, which is huge. And we have some modeling around that. But in a sense, those are two key indicators I can share with you quickly on the spot that are important. We can definitely dig in deeper throughout my stay here in Paris. But those are things that we are very sensitive to. And it's not only, you know, about having wonderful nature, but also having a lot of strategies that are super integral to really have huge effects on nature-based solutions.
Great. Thank you so much as well. Any other questions? We are almost out of time now, but we could feed the last one if there is. Right. Okay. So I don't think there are any others. So With that, thank you so much for joining. As I mentioned at the beginning, this is a speaker series. So our next talk is on Friday, October the 6th. We will have Tamar Flash from the Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel, speaking on connections between our modeling work on space-time geometries and the brain. Paul Rosin from the University of Pennsylvania, speaking about food worlds of French and American cultures. And Virginia Valian from Hunter College, about whether executive functions are immutable. It will be through the same link with the same registration you already did. We will be sending reminders of that, and you can find all the program in the link I am going to leave on the chat. And the recording of this talk will be available in our YouTube channel and in our proceedings, both available through our website. Thank you so much for joining, and see you next time.
Thank you all for having me. And thank you, Paulus, of course, for the invitation.
Thank you as well.
Thank you.